Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. Labrish. Getting in the mood. Reggae. Gentlemen, and welcome to the backyard. This is Margaret Marshall, your host, and I want to welcome you to the Labrish. Now, I'm going to ask you to join me in taking a virtual trip to Jamaica. I hope that the sounds of Kevin MacLeod's classical reggae have gotten you in a relaxed mood. So it's a tradition here when we get together in the backyard that we select our favorite chair and our favorite spot on the island. And I know you might not be from Jamaica, but quite likely you have visited. So you got to have a favorite spot. So it could be a hammock on the beach, under a mango tree, on the veranda, on the roof, or wherever. But when we get to the backyard, we just chill, and as we say there on the island, no problem, Mon. So just relax, because this evening I am going to continue to enlighten you about fabulous, wonderful, brilliant Watsons. And if you are on my list, you know that last week we celebrated the discovery. For me, it was quite a discovery of the very brilliant Spanish-tonian, Mr. James S. Watson, Honorable James S. Watson, who I have, incidentally, he was very famous in New York in the old days, and I interviewed quite a few New Yorkers who came. Some of them came as early as 1955, and they never heard of this famous gentleman. So I'm just going to do a little recap about his life, but you really get more details if you check last week's show. So I am going to, first of all, I want to welcome the callers online, those listening on their computers, and to remind you that if you want to join the Labrish, which I would really be honored if you do, you would call, and I'm sure the number is right there, but I'll tell you anyhow, 716-766-4558. I want to welcome the callers on the board. And, you know, I get a little giggly and lightheaded. I'm like a kid in a china shop. Now, is that a bull or a kid? I don't know, wherever. But I'm really, really excited when I find out new information. Because here in the backyard, the Labrish is designed to celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. And this show is just about that. I know that the the new, I wouldn't call them new, but the now Jamaicans are doing an excellent job of getting the news out about everything that's happening on the island, because they're all just as techy, or perhaps even more so, than a lot of people, even here, especially me. And some of my fans might not be as techy as some of the young folks there. As a matter of fact, there is a batch of them in Silicon Valley that is really moving and shaking. So everything that's happening there now is well documented. What this show does is dig up some of the old stuff that my fans might not know about. I certainly didn't know about it. And when we were in school in Jamaica, where we, incidentally, we got an excellent education, we really never talked about or were exposed to what some of our great Jamaicans did before us. So I'm filling in the gap. Now, for those who might come by later and listen to the show, all of this information that I am verbalizing is online, because that's where I find it. But I'm really led to it by the historians that I love to check their material out. And tonight, again, I'm using Dr. Joy Lumsden's discovery of this particular person to expand my knowledge, and hopefully yours, about the wonderful work Jamaicans have been doing for centuries and continue to do today. So let me give you some recap of the Honorable James S. Johnson. He was born in Spanish Town in 1882, way before my time. So we know that he was 23 when he went to New York. Of course, he got his elementary education in Jamaica, and he worked for the Myrtle Bank Hotel, as well as another hotel in Spanish Town. He was a cashier. He took care of the books, actually. And in 1905, he arrived in New York. Well, from what I can gather by the dateline, he hit the ground running, because he started to go to night school to get his high school diploma. And I'm really going into details here, because although most of my fans are the seniors, as I am the senior's senior, however, I am hoping that perhaps, you know, even after I'm not here, this is my little legacy that I'm leaving, some of the younger folks will be encouraged by the tenacity and determination of some of the older Jamaicans. Because this gentleman came, as I say, he hit the ground running. He started to work right away. He got a job. He had very excellent clerical skills. So he was working at two different hotels in Jamaica before he left. And incidentally, his father was a sergeant or something in the constabulary, which is the police force in Jamaica, and also worked for the railway as a conductor. So that's a little bit about his background. Now, he started he went to high school in New York and also got a job. He got a job with a law firm. And while there, and he graduated high school, so he came to New York when he was 23. He started to work with his law firm when he was 28. He graduated from high school when he was 26, I mean. He graduated from high school when he was 28. Isn't that something? And 10 years after that, he got his law degree. He was 31 when he got his law degree. He became a citizen when he was 34 in 1913. And in 1914, he was admitted to the bar. By that time, he was 28, talking about tenacity and drive. He got married in 1917 to a fellow Jamaican. And in 1920... He not only worked while he was working with the law firm, I suppose, right after, he started his own law firm with two other attorneys. In 1922, he became incidentally, before he left, so he started working as a clerk with this law firm and ended up being an attorney in the same law firm and left the firm as a head of one of the most important departments that they had. And as I am telling you, all of these details are on last week's show. So please feel free to go by in the archives and listen to the details about this. I just wanted to run it down because I talk about him as an excellent father and also a public servant. So tonight I am going to be talking about his children, at least three of his children. He and his wife has had four children, and I am unable to find any information about the fourth child. I don't have any information anywhere that I have found. And here's one of the times when I'd like to ask any of the fans that might come across the information to just share with both Dr. Lumsden and I. And you can get to Dr. Lumsden's site by just Googling her name, Dr. Joy Lumsden. I think her website is called Joyous Jam. She has a couple, but that one, you will find a lot of her information. Now, this gentleman died at the age of 70. He was voted into an office in New York as a judge, and you will hear the details that he won the position by a margin of about 9-1, whatever, but it was really, you know, quite a leap to become the first African-American, and we'll just say Black American because he was from Jamaica, so he's Jamaican-American, to have that position. So now I'm going to tell you about his famous family. And he was such a wonderful... At his funeral, there were more than 3,000 people, and the mayor at the time was one of his pallbearers. And he died in 1952. So I came to this country in 1959, and I had never heard of him. The first time I came on this information was when I was doing research for an interesting subject. And Dr. Joy Lumsden is always to my rescue for that. So let me now tell you about his famous family. Now, I'm going to start. He had two sons and a daughter that I found. It mentioned in his bio that he and his wife had four children, but I'll be discussing three of them this evening. So it will be two boys and a girl. So let's start with the girl. She was Barbara. Let me get my papers here. Her name was Barbara M. Watson, and she was born in New York, of course, on November 5th, 1918. And if you do her bio on Wikipedia, it will say that she's the daughter of James S. Watson, the first Black judge elected in New York State, and his wife, Violet Lopez Wilson, one of the founders of the National Council of Negro Women. Barbara M. Wilson was the sister of James Lopez Watson. James Lopez Watson and his cousin, and the cousin of J. Bruce Llewellyn and of Colin Powell. So they're related to the Powells. Barbara attended Barnard College, receiving her Bachelor of Art degree in 1943. After college, she took a job as an interviewer for the United Seamen Service. In 1946, she founded a modeling agency, Barbara Watson Models, serving as the agency's executive director until 1956. Watson then returned to school, attending New York Law School and graduating with a law degree in 1962. She spent from 1963 to 1964 working as an assistant attorney in the New York City Law Department, then spent from 1964 to 66 as executive director of the New York City Commission to the United Nations. Watson joined the United States Department of State in 1966 as special assistant to the deputy undersecretary of state for administration. She then became deputy assistant secretary of state for security and consular affairs from 1966 to 1968. In July of 68, the President of the United States, Lyndon Johnson, nominated Watson as Assistant Secretary of State for Security and Consular Affairs. And after Senate confirmation, she held this office from August 12, 1968 until December 1974. She was the first Black Assistant Secretary of State and the first woman to serve, as Assistant Secretary of State ever in the United States of America. Now, I am just, flabbergasted that we don't know all of that. I don't know if I was living behind some cloud or something, and I would love for other people on the board or listening online to sort of let me know, because I didn't have a clue. So, let me go on up here. Upon leaving government service in 1975, Watson took a job with Walter Amenberger's publication as a legal consultant. She also lectured at several colleges and universities. In January of 1977, President Jimmy Carter asked Watson to return to the State Department as Assistant Secretary of State for Consular Affairs. Her second stint in this office lasted from April 1977 to August 1980. President Carter later appointed Watson United States Ambassador to Malaysia. She presented her credentials on September 25th, 1980, and held the post until March 1981. Watson died at a hospital in Washington, D.C. on February 18th, 1983, at the age of 64. So, wow, I am telling you, and at this time I'm going to take a break and ask if any of the listeners on the board would like to chime in to this labrish, because I am breathless with excitement about all these fabulous people who, you know, have so much drive and tenacity and just broke so many barriers and opened so many doors. You know, the last Black female who, cannot think of her name now. You know, that's part of my issue right now, memory, when I'm so excited. But she served under the president before, or with the president before, President Obama now. And a lot of people, you know, talked about the first and the first and all of that. But I didn't know that we had a first before her. So anyone on the board want to chime in on this? If you do, you hit 1 on your telephone, and that will indicate to me, just like when in Jamaica, when we were in school, we'd have to put up our hand so the teacher would know that we want to say, I don't know what the kids are doing now, but we would raise our hand, and then we'd wait our turn when they call on us, then we could speak. So I see a hand raised, and I am going to open the mic. Welcome. You got Margaret all bubbly in the backyard. Who do I have?
Good evening, Margaret. This is Carl from Mount Vernon.
Hello, Carl from Mount Vernon. How are you?
I'm pretty good, thanks. I just chimed in late, so I did not hear the preview about this lady. Is this the Barbara? This Barbara Watts? Is Barbara, right? Watson? She's featured in a book on the Afro-American. It's a Negro Almanac, and it lists some of the very first blacks in all activities and professions in the United States. Now I have this question.
It's a calendar, you say?
No. It's a book described
as
the Negro Almanac and a reference work on the Afro-American.
I got you. Yes. But I'm sure it perhaps didn't. She was born in the United States, so it did not perhaps mention her Jamaican heritage.
Oh, I see, because what I'm reading here, but it's the same Barbara M. Watson, right?
Same Barbara M. Watson.
Yeah.
If she was born in 1918.
Right. In New York.
Yes, she was born in New York because both her mother and her father were from Jamaica and were adults when they went to New York, but they got married. I think the Honorable Judge Watson met his wife in New York. She lived in Connecticut, I think.
Yeah, there's an extensive biography that mentions about the modeling and also that she worked as an attorney with the New York City Board of Statutory Review.
Right.
Oh, you have gone over that already.
Yes, isn't that fascinating? But here's my question. At the time that you read that, I'm gathering you read that some time ago?
No, I just took up the book because I do have an...
Oh, you have the book?
Yes, I do have a book on prominent... Black Americans who are first in every field, clergymen, educators, federal officials, and so on.
Right. Well, of course, you know, as I would call, just like I call my grandchildren, I would call her a Jamaican.
You're right.
So would I. Right. My husband was from Jamaica, as I am, but all our children were conceived here.
Right.
And now I have grandchildren that are also Jamaican, as far as I'm concerned. But if someone was writing a bio on them or they were writing their own bio, you know, they might mention. Although I must say that my eldest grandson is so always talking about his Jamaican grandmother. His grandfather is no longer around. But, you know, had I not read about her father... because of Dr. Lumsden, I would not even be able to identify her as a Jamaican.
Yes. You know, it's amazing to see the amount of people who have distinguished themselves in all fields of activity, professional fields, law, medicine, and so on, that they're just now unearthing. And
yes,
I know
yes.
that with the Black Studies program that they initiated in the 60s, I think it was in the late 60s, in the colleges, there are a lot of...
Black History Month, yes.
Yes, there are a lot of Black...
It's amazing to me, though. You know, think of the year he come up. We're talking about 1905.
Right.
We're talking about 1905. And he comes to Brooklyn. you know, he comes to New York City, and
yeah.
and was able to do all the things he did.
That's right.
I mean, he went to high school, he went to law school, he was multitasking, and he even multitasked before he came here. I mean, it's the discipline, it's the drive. I think that it is so important, and I'm making these points because I want to help the grandparents and the parents to instill in the generations that are coming up, you know, the young children now, the
right.
importance of focus, the importance of discipline, and the importance of passion about what you do, finding
yes.
your passion, because it's obvious that he had a lot of drive and passion. And who knows, and you know, I love to make up my own sidebars, as I call them, quite likely he was able to get that job part, at the time, it was part-time, I'm sure, or he was going to school part-time with the law firm.
Right.
It was a Jewish law firm, by the name I'm gathering. You know, that he was quite focused while he was there. So he worked himself up from a clerk to become an attorney, and not only an attorney, but work for the same firm that he started at the bottom of the barrel with.
Right.
And became one of their top, in charge of a whole department, and which was very important, it was taxes, tariffs. So he had a very intricate discipline, even within the law.
And even at a time when blacks were never highlighted as being achievers.
Yes.
As achievers.
And, you know, people really don't have any excuses now.
No, absolutely.
They really don't. I mean, if you have the drive and the will and the passion, it can be done. I'm not saying it's going to be easy or it will be easy, but every story that I cover so far, and I'm just giving a voice to these stories. That's what I call myself. I'm not making up the stories. They're already there, you know. But a lot of people nowadays, like everybody else, don't have time to read. So I know that it's easier to listen because somehow a lot of people are listening after the show closes. So, and I want to thank the fans for spreading the word, you know, and getting the word out. But people are definitely listening because we're getting quite a few hits.
Yes.
So thank you. And, you know, we can leave your mic open if you wish or, you know, so you can. I'm going to start reading now about the other son.
And stand by and listen.
Okay. Now, which is Douglas C. Watson. And I'm reading from Wikipedia, his bio there. He was a design engineer, and he died when he was 73. He was in military aviation. Douglas C. Watson, an aeronautical engineer, died on Saturday at his home in Jamaica, Queens. When I saw the Jamaica at first, I thought it was West Indies, but Jamaica, Queens. He was 73. Mr. Watson, who had suffered from emphysema for several years, died in his sleep, a family spokesman said. One of the first black aeronautical engineers in the United States. Isn't that something?
Sure.
Mr. Watson spent 27 years with the Fairchild Republic Aviation Corporation in Farmingdale, Long Island. He retired in 1978 as the company's chief of requirements and planning systems. Let me get my word here. Effectiveness. During his career, he helped to develop the F-105 and the F-84 jet fighters. But Mr. Watson considered his role in the design of the long-range P-47N, a bomber escort, to be his major contribution to aviation. He also designed several private HOMES homes and commercial properties in Lead Consulting Company. Isn't that something? I am taking a little sidebar here to know that how all the children multitasked. You know, his sister had a modeling agency while she had a job.
Yes.
That's something.
Sure.
So here he is designing planes and designing homes, commercial properties. I am private homes and commercial properties. I mean, are you amazed? Impressed?
Very amazed, very amazed.
I am flabbergasted. Forget about all of that. I cannot find words. And I don't know if he's in that book, but he's supposed to be in that book.
No, as you speak, I'm looking further.
All right.
Is there any gems?
I'll take from Fairchild, where he began his career as a designer, working on both commercial and military aircraft. He served as president of the Starbee Research Corporation Consulting Engineers. Mr. Watson received a bachelor's degree in 1941 and a master's degree in 1943 from New York University, both in aeronautical engineering, and later did advanced studies at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. When he first graduated from NYU, Mr. Watson was the only black in his class, the third-ranking student in aeronautical engineering, and a winner of the Vogt Medal for Aeronautical Design. Now, let me tell you something. Sidebar. I am sure there are kids, Jamaican kids or Jamaican kids going to MIT right now and don't even know that.
That's right.
You know what I mean? And that's why I am so passionate. Every time I say, you know, I'm getting too old, this is taking me too much. Sometimes I get very stressed out when I'm looking for the material, you know, to support what I've selected to talk about. And it can be challenging sometimes when you get to my age and with a little challenged eyesight. And I'm saying that to say I am looking for a volunteer. So if there's anyone out there who loves history and who loves Jamaica or Jamaican history, please go to my website, which is Backyard Lavish, and send me a little note saying that you'd like to be on my list, number one, if you just like to know what we're going to talk about. Or better yet, you'd like to talk to me about helping me out with some of this research. So with that said, let me get back to all of this exciting information here. Mr. Watson was born to a family of achievers, amen to that. In 1930, his father, the late Judge James S. Watson, was the first black man elected to what was then called the New York City Municipal Court.
Right.
His younger brother, James L. Watson, is the senior judge at the time is the senior judge of the United States Court of International Trade. Mr. Watson's late sister, Barbara Watson, was the first black assistant secretary of state and later served as ambassador to Malaysia. Mr. Watson is survived by his wife of 45 years. Her name was Barbara, too. Two boys, Mark of Montclair, New Jersey, and Craig of Chicago. His brother, James, a sister, Grace, and four grandchildren. So there are quite a lot of Watsons running around out there, and I just want to celebrate them. But, you know, it all started with the daddy and the mommy. I am just so inspired because, you know, in all of this you see that the importance of a structure, the importance of a plan. And, you know, it works. It really, really is important and I want to take this opportunity to encourage some of the seniors that might feel that they have nothing to contribute, or they're finished, they're retired, they're resigned, they are whatever, I want to just encourage them to, you know, get involved with the youth, get involved with leaving a legacy. When you help someone, it could be someone in your family, a friend's family, or even a stranger, when you help them in any way to really understand the importance of discipline. Because if you don't have discipline in anything you do, you know, you're not really going to achieve, or I would say, be the best that you can be, because you're just scattered. So I want to encourage the seniors to know that they can leave a legacy by in some way helping to inspire the next generation. So with that said, I'll get back to what I'm supposed to be doing. So, Mr. Carl, you ever heard of this distinguished engineer?
Frankly, no, but I share your view on seizing the opportunity for the new generation, who we have been so diluted with migration. We are all over the world, and there is no record or anything publicized about the achievements of our people. And I believe that although the race has gone through a lot of problems with the struggle, racism, and all the other lines drawn to give the impression that they cannot achieve, they should be made aware that there is always opportunity out there. And you'll notice that the new immigrants are the ones who are recognizing the value and the opportunities that exist in spite of the residue. There's still a leftover of racism in the United States.
Well, we're not going to get into politics about that. We're just going to talk about all the can-dos.
Right, that's right. That's what I'm saying, the point that you can do.
Mm-hmm. Because I'm sure that when Dad got here in 1905, you know, there was no red carpet being laid out for him.
That's right.
But he didn't care what color the carpet was. He knew what he had to do,
That's right.
He did what he was supposed to.
Correct.
So you have to not look right or left. Just look straight ahead.
Of course.
At what you want to do.
Of course.
Because where there's a will, there's always a way.
Absolutely.
So that's really what I hope that the seniors will try to really instill in the next generation, is that there's always possibilities. You just have to look for them.
That's right.
And don't get involved in all the other baggage. You don't need to.
No.
You know, just define and decide what it is that you want to do in this life. It's yours. We're all here together, and I really, you know, when you hear all these stories of people who have really, really been victimized, abused also, and they overcome.
Yes.
They overcome. Yeah. So, you know, it's the individual drive. It's the individual decision to make and the commitment that needs to be instilled.
Yes, and to accept the fact that it's there, it's up to you to grasp and embrace the opportunities that are out there.
If it is to be, it's up to me.
Right.
That's the bottom line.
Right.
So now I am going to, let me just see if there was anything else here. There is a press release, actually, when Jimmy Carter appointed the Barbara, and you know, that was quite an honor. It says here, It was July 1980. The president today announced that he will nominate Barbara M. Watson of the District of Columbia to be the ambassador extraordinaire of the United States to Malaysia. She would replace Robert Miller, who retired. Watson had been Assistant Secretary of State since 1977. She was born in 1918 in New York City, and Watson received an AB in 43 from Barnard College and an LLB in 1962 from New York Law School. From 1943 to 1946, she was an interviewer with the United Seaman Service of New York. Wilson was owner and executive director of Barbara Watson's Models from 1946 to 1956, and a clerk with the Christophers of New York from 56 to 57. So it's more or less the same thing. She served as a special assistant. This was just a press release I came across. And, of course, the assistant secretary position, let me just read, because a lot of people might not know, you know, what that is all about. The assistant secretary of state for council affairs is head of the Bureau of Consular Affairs within the United States Department of State.
Right.
The assistant secretary of state reports to the Undersecretary of State for Management. From 1973 to 1977, the position was called Administrator of the Bureau of Secretary and Consular Affairs. So it was a very big position that she had.
If I may interject, sorry to interrupt, but she was also the executive director of the New York City Commission to the United Nations between 1964 to 1966.
Right. We read that in the first part of it. You might have come in late and missed that. But the point is this, you know, she even had to be approved by Congress.
Of course.
At the time. So it was quite a big deal. Quite a big deal. All right. Well, let me tell you about her. What time is it? Ooh, Lord. I mean, I'm chatting, and sometimes the time goes by so quickly. But let me tell you now about she was an attorney, and so was her brother, who we're going to talk about now, who is James. He has the same name as his father, but a different middle name. His middle name was Lopez, L-O-P-E-Z. Now, was that his mother's first name? I think she was Violet Lopez.
No, I don't.
Did you hear me say that? Well, you know, I do so much reading, and I'm flipping through so many different papers sometimes that I think that was his mother's maiden name, you know, before she got married. She gave him, I just noticed this as I'm looking on this, she gave him her middle name, her name before she got married as her maiden name. So let's talk about him now. Let me read his bio first. And I found somebody interviewed him, someone who did a page or have a website on MLK, talked about interviewing this judge. So let me talk. This is what Wikipedia has to say. James Lopez Watson was born in May of 1922, and he died in September of 2001. He was a judge of the United States Custom Court and of its successor, the United States Court of International Trade. Judge Watson was born in Harlem, New York, the son of James S. Watson and his wife, Violet. During World War II, he fought in Italy with the army and was awarded the Purple Heart. He received a BA from New York University in 1947 and an LLB from Brooklyn Law School in 1971. All three of them went to the same law school.
Hmm.
In 1954, he was elected to the New York State Senate. Isn't that something? In 1963, he was elected to the New York City Civil Court. Excuse me. On March 7th, 1966, President Lyndon Johnson appointed him to the United States Custom Court, which became the United States Court of International Trade in 1980. Excuse me. Because judges of that court are periodically assigned to federal courts around the country, Watson became the first African-American judge to head a federal court in the South since Reconstruction. He took senior status in 1991, but continued to serve on the court until his death from cancer in 2001. In 2003, the courthouse at One Federal Plaza in Manhattan was named the James L. Watson United States Court of International Trade Building in his honor.
Isn't
that something?
Amazing, yes.
Oh, my God.
He was highly respected and revered.
Very much so. But what a family of trailblazers. That's how I would describe them. But let me just tell you what is on this page that I found, which is the life of honoring Reverend Martin Luther King. And it started out by saying, many people have been influenced by the words, the message, and the ideas of Dr. King. As this section grows, we will explore the lives of the leader and the prominent people in society who were directly affected by Dr. King. We will also post the writings from people who have never knew and all of that. So that was what this website is all about. So it starts off with, when we arrived, he graciously, now that, remember they're talking about Judge James Lopez Watson. When we arrived, he graciously welcomed the five of us into his office, telling us to pull up chairs around the, I can't even pronounce the word, PULCHRITUDINOUSLY. Prestigious desk. That word, then, prestigious desk, in which, if used as a dining table, could seat twice as many people. His high-backed seat stood in relief against the 5-foot window behind him, which looked out into a classical New York courthouse, held high with pillars. The judge was light brown skin, glasses, a mustache, and whitish hair on the sides of his head. But his most distinguished feature is his self-possessed smile, which hints at a mind moving far faster than his unabrupt manner of speaking. As he spoke, he let us look through a big and thick black book filled with photos of him and almost every other important figure of the last couple of generations, black and white, such as MLK, Malcolm X, Willie Mays, etc. He also spoke a bit about his family, which had a long history of advanced degrees and prestigious positions in the society. His father, James S. Watson, was born in Jamaica and went on to become the first black judge in New York State, appointed in 1931. His sister Barbara was the first woman African-American in the State Department. She was Assistant Secretary of State, and when she passed, was the U.S. Ambassador to Malaysia. Among his living cousins, Watson counts Colin Powell. The resemblance was apparent.
I didn't know that.
Beg your pardon?
I said I didn't know about that connection, that relationship to Colin Powell.
Yes, yes. And it was the march on Washington where Judge Watson met MLK for the first time. The judge knew him through his wife, who had known Martin while he was attending Morehouse College. During this famous speech in 1963, he, the judge, sat on stage 10 rows behind MLK. Afterwards, he remarked, "I was very impressed. Anyone present could not help but be impressed and influenced." Then it went on to say, this is the writer of this story, "Before leaving, Judge Watson would mention a bit about his own life. He had earned 3 Purple Hearts from battle on the Italian front. Confirming this, the judge pulled up a pant leg to relieve a permanent gorge in his skin the size of a small fist. In 1966, he became the 10th African-American to be appointed to the federal court. While he was attending law school in Brooklyn, he owned a liquor store in Harlem.
Oh, no.
Went to class in the morning and worked at night. I brought this out to say how he, too, multitasked."
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Judge Watson stressed the importance of education above all else. People would sometimes ask him why he was going to school when he had a liquor store. The young Watson would point to his license on the wall and say, "You see that? They can take that away from me. What's up here?" pointing to his head. He would say, "No man can take that."
That's his own.
Ah.
And hence his own enterprise also regarding.
Right, right. So even though he was in a, I'm sure at the time, very lucrative business, he owned a liquor store, he was going to law school.
Yes.
Because the license on the wall could be taken away, and the liquor store could be burnt down, and money could stop coming in. But what he was learning, you see, knowledge can never be erased. And with that, it's almost 9 o'clock. Can you imagine that?
Yeah.
We have been on for an hour.
But I find this very fascinating, though.
Ah, I am so animated and fascinated and really proud.
I always wondered, if I may interrupt, I always wondered the achieving blacks who had roots in Jamaica, many times, they never had the opportunity, I call it opportunity, to return to Jamaica to share.
Oh,
he did.
The
achievements.
If you listen to his father, he went back to Jamaica after he was a judge, and he was really entertained by his peers. So that is in last week's story. He did go back.
Oh, good.
And there was I think that's how Dr. Joy Lumsden found him, because, you know, there were prints in the paper in 1934 or wherever, which is before I was born, and before you were born, I'm sure.
No, well,
him coming back. So he did go back.
You know, I'm not implying that they rejected their roots, but sometimes they become so involved in their careers and other pursuits that there was not enough time, unless a brief vacation.
Right. Well, you know, I would fall in that bracket. I don't know about you.
Yes.
But I have been here since 1959.
Yeah.
And I really have not gone back to Jamaica, you know, to have a career there or anything like that. So I think, you know, not only was it happening then, it's happening now.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And but
we're children of the universe,
of
actually.
Course.
And, you know, recently we lost Oswald Russell, who I had spoken about him. There's a show done about him.
Yes.
Classical musician extraordinaire, who not only, you know, excelled in classical music, but he wrote music, and he composed, apparently, I'm not a classical music expert, but apparently I see that he got a lot of accolades because he was able to merge. There's a piece that is getting, you know, a lot of buzz, that he wrote that integrated the Jamaican rhythm and folk song into the classical beat.
Yes.
Or bars or whatever they call.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
The writing of that. And it has been played by several renowned classical musicians, and I'm sure that it will perhaps even get more famous now. I think it's called 5 Jamaican Dances or something like that, whatever the piece is called. But, you know, I did a show on the classical musicians of Jamaica perhaps 2 years ago, because this show has been going on since 2008. And there are several shows in the archives that are celebrating Jamaicans that have spread their wings and have made quite an impression all over the world. I mean, England, Australia, Africa, just all over. And I'm encouraging the fans to, you know, check out the archives. There are some wonderful shows about Jamaicans, perhaps, that you've never heard about. So I really encourage you to check the archives. And I want to thank everyone for their support. I'm sure people are passing the word around about these stories being put to voice, because they're all on the internet. Sometimes they're a little difficult to find, but the historians are doing a good job at bringing them to our attention. So, Mr. Carl, I thank you for being my co-host tonight, helping me out.
The pleasure was mine.
I'm not alone. There are other people on the board, but I think they just want to listen. And I am just so glad that they're comfortable in their easy chair.
Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity and to participate in the program, and I had hoped that I was able to add some more information. As I heard you on the air before I signed on, I started to seek out some of this information.
Do you have more information you want to share?
At the moment, no. I think I've reached just about what I was able to dig up.
Oh, good.
What I realized that I was repeating some of the things you already had stated in the earlier part of the show.
Oh, well, that's all right. You remember, this is not CNN. It's elaborate. I always tell people, you know, I'm not necessarily politically correct, although we don't discuss politics and we don't do religion and we don't do sex. We just do not. I don't say we don't do that, but what you know what I mean. No, you get me.
I do.
We're here. And fans that come by, you know, I'm just a little old lady having fun. And I really, really am very passionate about, you know, bringing to life all of these people. I only select the Jamaicans because I'm from there, but I'm sure there are people all over the Caribbean and all over the world of the past that the younger generation can get so much from, you know, from their drive, their tenacity, their passion, how they overcame so many obstacles for us to be talking about them now.
Right.
So, you know, it's not always going to be easy, but, you know, if if there's a will, as I say, there's always a way.
Of course. And, so and it, that, it does provide a certain amount of inspiration and hope that you also, the young person, can achieve and not be bothered by all the negative things that sometimes get more attention in the media.
Right. Not only that, even in communities and families, you know,
right.
It's not all the time that the youngsters sometimes have the encouragement or the support, whether it's financial or, you know, emotional or whatever. It's not always that they have the support that they need.
That's right.
But even so, I hope they will be encouraged to know that while there's a will, there's a way.
Correct. Correct.
So if I can leave the listeners who come by later on with just one thing, is that, you know, be of service when you can, because in that you are leaving a part of yourself.
Well said.
And with that said, I want to thank everyone listening on the board, online, and ask you to come by next week, ask you to spread the word, and to encourage you to make it a great week. And remember, we're here each Thursday at 8 o'clock, where we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica.
Of Jamaica, land we love.
And we love. All right. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.